Where warp meets weft.
Where warp meets weft.
This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Welcome to episode 28, Designing Multi-Shaft Drafts. This episode, we welcome the innovative and talented Bonnie Inoue. She makes these lovely organic curves and very rich textile designs. And part of the way she does this is she uses looms that have 16 shafts or more, because this gives much greater design possibility. She's the author of Exploring Multi-Shaft Design, which is one of the best books I've seen for learning how to design your own weave drafts and make the most out of a loom, especially if you have a lot of shafts to work with. And we have a wonderful audio essay this episode from John Sandstrom, An Evening with Penelope. I'd like to update you on how the Weaving for Afghans for Afghans initiative is going. We have had nearly 40 pounds of yarn donated. We've had 15 weavers sign up and pledge to weave 28 shawls. And I've talked to a couple of other weavers who are using their own yarn and sending things out. We're starting to get some pictures of completed shawls, and as those come in, I'm putting them up on the Flickr site. And Ann Rubin tells me that she's beginning to get shawls and is really impressed at how beautiful they are. So we are letting the knitting world know we're here. There was a point where I was running out of yarn, but thanks to some recent really wonderful donations, I have plenty left to share. If you're interested in weaving for this initiative, please get in touch and I will send you out some yarn. And I feel I must apologize to a couple of folks because this is the first time I've organized something like this and I made a few mistakes. In some cases, I calculated what I thought was the right amount of yarn, but it turned out not to be enough yarn. And in another case, I sent thicker yarn and forgot to update the set info on the little sheet I'm sending with the yarn. And I'm very sorry. Please, if something has gone wrong with what I have sent you, let me know and we'll make it right. I am as human as all of you, and I hope you will just bear with me as I learn how to do these organizational things. The deadline to have your shawls turned in to Afghans for Afghans is the beginning of July. So if you think that you might have some weaving time in June, let me know and I will send you out some wool. Please, if you do sign up, make sure to check in with the Afghan for Afghans requirements up on their website. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. In other news, the Summer Weave Zine is online. It's full of lots of fun, portable summer weaving projects. I'm looking for models in the Seattle area to help me show off the handwoven garments for future issues. So if you're within an hour's drive from Seattle and you're interested in modeling handwoven garments, please contact me at editor@weavezine.com. I'm also offering a copy editing internship. This would be an internship where you work at home and help proof the fall issue on the test server. So if you're interested in that, same email, editor@weavezine.com. Our sponsor this episode is Just Our Yarn. They are two ladies who are purveyors of luscious hand-painted yarns for weavers. They also offer pre-packaged weaving kits. You can check out their wares online at their website, and they will also be at Convergence in Tampa in June. So if you're going to Convergence, stop by their booth and ask to take a look at the samples of the scarves that they've woven up using their hand-painted tinsel. They are just stunning. The pictures on their website do not do justice to the wonderful color shimmer and the drape of these scarves. It just, at Madrona, the woven scarves were kind of tucked in the back, so you might have to ask to take a look, but they are well worth checking out. I do appreciate the way Just Our Yarn has continued to support the show, so thank you very much. If you're going to be in Tampa and you see me walking around Convergent, please say hi. I'll be the gal wearing the headset and the microphone. I would love to meet you. It'd be great to get some Weaver on the Street comments about Convergence for folks who aren't attending this year. So if you're willing to talk on the microphone, let me know. If you're not willing, you're free to just say hi, and I promise not to record you unless you're up for it. Seattle with Bonnie Inoue. I'm delighted to have her here because she is a weaver whose work I've admired from afar. She does incredibly complicated and organic weaving, but with really technical multi-shaft techniques. So it's this interesting blend of left brain, right brain stuff that's just intrigues me and is beautiful to look at. So I'm delighted to have you here talking to us.
Left brain, right brain, that's neat. When I was a college student at Swarthmore College in the 60s, I was studying art history and French literature, and I had a minor in math. And I started weaving on my own, self-taught, and I thought, I have discovered the place where art and math come together. And that's still what you're seeing in my work.
That's one of the things I love about weaving is it makes my whole brain happy.
Yeah, that's right. When I had four shafts, I tried several different structures, but I really wanted as much design possibility as I could have. So I ended up mainly pursuing just things that would give me four blocks on four shafts. That did limit it quite a bit. When I tried summer and winter, I only had two pattern blocks and I got bored with it. It seemed like a nice enough structure. It was consistent float length and so forth, but I get bored easily. That's a major problem that I've had in all kinds of things all my life. When I learned to knit from my grandmother, I could figure out how to make up patterns and colors and all the rest of it, but still took me a while to get across a row. Okay, now I've done that row, now I turn around and I have to go all the way across the next row. So when I started weaving right away, one of the nice things was that once you got the loom set up, you could see the fabric row in front of you. But after I've been weaving a little while, I realized I didn't want to just have the same design every couple of inches. And I can sit down at a loom and make up a design that keeps flowing if I have a treadle loom. And it's fun. I encourage people in my workshops to try that. So I give them drafts to follow, but I encourage them to make their own drafts and to improvise with the design of the structure at the loom and give them tools to do so. And there's always somebody in a group that will take off and try it.
You're known for doing multi-shaft weaving. At what point did you make the jump from a four-harness loom to 16-harness?
In 1987, I'd been weaving exactly 20 years, and I bought a 16-shaft AVL. So I went from a four-shaft Leclerc with six treadles to a 16-shaft loom with dobby bars and pegs. In between, I thought about it for a while. We lived in North Carolina for 5 years. My husband got his PhD at the University of North Carolina. I started seeing cloth that had been woven on more than four shafts, and a lot of it looked to me incredibly busy. I decided I wasn't going to get more than four shafts because I didn't want my work to look that busy. It took me a while to realize that the pieces that looked busy to me looked intricate and fancy to the people who had made them, and they looked the way they did because the weaver decided this is what she wanted the piece to look like, and that if I bought a loom with more than four shafts, I was the one who was going to decide what the piece would look like. I tried a number of things, and after a while realized that I needed more than four shafts to get the kind of smooth movements I wanted. If you have something that's a fairly large scale and you want to make a curve, a flowing line, something like a river, and you only have, say, four pixels to express this design, then it's going to be very pixelated, blocky. And this happens in weaving easily if you only have four pattern blocks. So I went to 16 so I'd have more pattern blocks.
That's an interesting way to describe it. You're saying that the more shafts you have, it's almost like better resolution in the designs you can create.
It is.
You're wearing a vest that has very flowing, large-scale swirls. And when you sit down to design something like that, can you talk about your process?
One of the things I aim for often is a design that has an organic feel to it. My husband's a biologist and I've studied botany. I admire the shapes that I find in nature. And it's also sometimes a challenge in the medium of weaving. I paint and I do block prints of the scenes in Colorado and the wildflowers. In weaving, you have a grid. So it's easy to do a straight line in weaving. It takes a little more effort to make things look organic and curved and smooth. I like the challenge. And also, I like things that keep changing as I weave because it's more fun for me to weave it and I don't get bored as quickly. Years and years ago, I made some things where I made a design and I repeated it however many times to finish the piece. And because I like larger designs, I had a large overshot design and I was making some baby blankets. And I found out that if you have six repeats of a big design on a blanket and one of them isn't quite right, you can tell it's a mistake. But if it keeps changing all the time and it looks more organic, then it looks fine.
Okay, you've just motivated me to try this technique. That's an excellent point.
When I think about designing a textile, I think about what structure would I like to use for this cloth and what kind of design do I want. And I have a sense of scale early on. So not just the curving shapes or the plant forms or river forms or mountain forms or whatever, but how big will they be? And right away I'm thinking about how big a scale do I want in my threading, and that'll affect up and down the textile, and how big a scale will I want in my treadling. I pick a weave structure based on what it will contribute to the end product. So I'm looking for the hand and drape. If it's going to be something that has to hang, like a shawl, the drape is very important. If I'm making something like a pillow cover, doesn't have to drape at all. But drape is a big consideration. Float length. In most structures, I can control the float length. I want a consistent float length throughout. That has to do with how it will drape, but also how it will wear. Durability is another factor that I consider. Sometimes it doesn't matter, but I'm very practical and I'm making mainly functional items. I've done some commission wall pieces, but most of the time I make functional cloth. I want it to wear evenly. Float length has implications for light reflectancy. If I'm going to be using shiny, something like silk or Tencel, I want it to shimmer. Sometimes I'm looking for woven iridescence. Some structures are better for that than others. For the visual impact, that's the other big thing I'm looking for.
If you want a shiny look and you're using something like silk, a longer float length would give you more of the shine.
Yeah, to some extent. Certainly, structure with floats will shine more than something like a plain weave. Shadow weave, which is mostly plain weave, that's not going to shimmer as much as a twill or a satin or something like an echo weave. I play with the float length. But when I'm working with twills and silk, I'll often put a little area of plain weave in it to give contrast to the floats and sort of accentuate the shininess of the floats. And when I'm working with a lustrous fiber, which I enjoy doing, I generally do want a consistent float length. So I would avoid doing something like an advancing tool or a network drafted tool with a mirror reversal, because down the point, the mirror, you get longer floats, and the longer floats would shine more and also wear out faster, but they'll attract attention by lining up all up and down the point in the threading. So for a while, I avoided putting points in my threadings because I didn't want to have that break in the flow of the design. I wanted the design to flow across and to be able to use the cloth like a canvas that I was painting on. I didn't want the lines down it to interrupt it. Then I realized if you put points all over the place, like advancing points instead of advancing twill, you can draw with points and you will have that longer float all over the fabric, and it no longer draws your eye to that one place. I work in series, so I'll put a fairly long warp on. Once you've got a warp on, you can sit down and weave. If you have 20 yards, you can sit and weave for a while. I do have now sectional warp on my 24 shift AVL, so I can put on longer warps if I want. But I make each piece different because I get bored. So I think hard about the design I want in my threading. I will rough out a design for the threading, express it in the structure or structures that I want to use. With each kind of threading that I use, I know several structures I can do on that threading. If my threading has shapes that go up and down like mountains, well, I've already woven with things like that, so I know what kinds of designs I can make with those, and are those the kinds of designs I might want to use on this warp. But if I haven't tried a particular kind of movement, then I make a whole bunch of drafts and I try that threading with treadlings that I've done before and I have on file, and just plop that treadling in and see what it does, and then look for it within that design on the screen, which parts are of particular interest. Because then when I'm actually making the drafts for the piece, I'll know, well, I'd like to work with this kind of shape in the treadling. I hardly ever use drafts that are woven as drawn in. They're square designs. Whatever movement you have in your threading will be the exact same size as in the treadling. I prefer designs that are taller than they are wide. I always wished I were taller and less wide, and I can do this in my cloth. And if I'm making something like this vest or something to wear, I think it's probably more becoming if it's longer than it is wide. And I find that graceful, designs that are longer than they are wide. So I keep that in mind when I'm designing things.
When you start designing, are you starting at the profile draft level and then applying weave structures to it?
Usually not. I'm working with structures that I've used a lot already.
Which structures are those?
Within the last 7 years or so, the structures that I've been exploring most of the time fall in two categories. One of them is woven imagery, loom-controlled imagery, and I'm mainly using turned summer and winter for that. So it's a tied threading. I dedicate two shafts of the loom to keeping the structure consistent and functional, and that takes care of float length worries. On a 24 shaft loom, I have 22 pattern blocks to play with, and I can combine them in any way I want. That's the beauty of a tied weave. On a four shaft loom, you only have two blocks of summer and winter, but it's enough to start learning about. I put my tie downs on my first two shafts. So the threading would be 1, 3, 2, 3 is the first block. You could repeat it as much as you wanted. The second block would be 1, 4, 2, 4. Then if you had, say, six shafts, you could keep going. 1, 5, 2, 5. 1, 6, 2, 6. And then 1, 7, 2, 7. So every other thread is either on a 1 or a 2. And there's a whole group of threadings that will use two shafts or sometimes three or four to take care of the structure. It's in the threading. What you gain from that is, well, let's look at an 8-shaft loom with a summer and winter threading and just single blocks. 1-3-2-3, 1-4-2-4, 1-5-2-5. Once you've got two shafts dedicated to tying down the floats, then the rest of them, the pattern shafts, can be used independently. You don't have the limits of how many times you could repeat something or use it. In fact, you could have all the pattern threads in play or none of. When I said with a 4-shaft loom, you have two blocks, pattern threads on the 3rd shaft and pattern threads on the 4th shaft. But when you're weaving, you could have all pattern or just the ones on the 3 or just the pattern on the 4 or none of them. And you can combine them. If you have 8 shafts, you have 6 pattern blocks, but you could use none of them or just any one or any 2 together or any 3 together or any 4 together or any 5 or all 6. The only problem with that is you start running out of treadles.
Which is where the computerized weaving comes in.
I prefer the term computer-assisted weaving. The computer doesn't thread the loom for me, wind the warp through the shuttle. There are lots of things that the computer doesn't do. On a computer-assisted loom, the important thing it's doing is controlling which shafts are up together at a time, which is basically what your tie-up does. And you asked me about moving from 4 shafts to more. I spent about a year looking at looms with more than 4 shafts, and I had some serious questions that I think might be worth sharing with other weavers. And one of them was, okay, how many treadles do I need? So if I had 8 shafts, there are 254 possible combinations, but you wouldn't be doing all of them. But 10 treadles is a pretty small proportion of 254 combinations. I thought about that. And then I also thought about, if I had more treadles, would I be comfortable using them while weaving? So you have to be able to put your left foot on the treadle that's farthest off to the left and be able to put the shuttle in from the right side. I'm not a big person, and I sat down and tried out looms. Now, I know you're hoping to go to Convergence. One of the really exciting things about Convergence is that just about all the loom manufacturers in North America will have booths, and you can sit down and try out their looms. I did that. I sat down and tried out looms. I was looking for a loom that had 8 or more shafts and had enough treadles to make it worthwhile. And then how would I feel getting under the loom and changing the tie-up? Because once you have a lot of shafts, you have lots of tie-up possibilities. You want to be able to use them. And could I comfortably reach them? And I knew I wanted a 60-inch loom with a fly shuttle because I'd been using a 60-inch width loom without a fly shuttle, and my shoulders were getting really tired. You learn the hard way. I had started doing some double width pieces, king-sized blankets, bedspreads. I looked at, well, 8 shafts, I'd only be able to have 4 for a layer. So maybe it would be fun to try 16. And there wasn't any way I could reach 18 treadles on a 16-shaft loom comfortably. AVL had a Dobby loom with bars and pegs, and the system instantly made sense to me. You could change the tie-up by putting the bars on a table. So I used the bars and pegs for 3 years. I think it gave me a pretty solid foundation in understanding the role of the tie-up in a draft and when I would want to make a draft without a tie-up, which you can do for a Dobby or a computer-assist loom. Just design in the lift plan.
You've written a book called Exploring Multishaft Design.
Uh-huh.
What was the motivation?
people are buying looms with more shafts for quite a few different reasons. And some of them are practical reasons. Like I was just saying, it's uncomfortable to change the tie-up on your loom. So you want a loom where you don't have to physically climb around underneath and spend a lot of time hooking things up. Some people were buying them because they just wanted a loom they wouldn't outgrow. Oh, it wasn't just the not having to do the tie-up. I found sitting at looms that if the treadles were right in front of me, I could weave with better posture. And that's still the case, that although I can do long, non-repeating patterns improvising at a floor loom with, say, 10 treadles, I think I weave with better posture when I have two treadles and they're directly in front of me. And some people turn to multi-shaft looms because they come with these other things. And then they look at all those shafts and say, now, what am I going to do? People were posting to weaving lists. I've been active on weaving lists since about 95, and I've had a website of some sort for about that long. And people fairly often would say, I just got a loom with 12 shafts or 16 or 24 or whatever. So where do I find the pattern books for this? I would always say, oh, it's so much more fun to make up your own. Don't need pattern books. And when you have more shafts, you have way more possibilities. So do you really want a thick book with lots and lots of patterns to follow? Over the years, I've also found out that most of the published drafts that we have are a smaller scale than what I'm interested in. So I was teaching people how to make their own drafts using the number of shafts they had on the loom. We needed to have a loom with more than 8 shafts in the classroom. And at that point, it was very hard to do. Now there are some workshop looms with more shafts, but they're still not all that easy to transport. And they're not inexpensive. After teaching this introduction to multi-shaft design workshop a couple of times for conferences, I decided it would make more sense to write the workshop up as a book and let people do it at home.
It's a wonderful book. I haven't worked through the exercises because all I have is an 8-shaft loom.
You can do them on 8. You really can, and you'll learn.
It's interesting how each chapter teaches you some aspect of learning how to essentially control the design of your weaving instead of just following paths other people have blazed, how to figure out your own path.
The basic idea behind the way I organize, I spent a lot of time thinking, what do I want to present first and what second? To understand all three parts of a draft, the threading, the tie-up, and the treadling. The drawdown comes from those. Then start with something very simple and change one thing at a time and see what happens. So then I thought about, okay, which part should we change first? Most of the exercises are done with one simple threading, changing the tie-up and changing the treadling, but changing them in specific ways, following step-by-step directions. I find that also helps you understand your weaving software better. I'm telling you, change one thing and you have to figure out how to change that thing in your weaving software. And with weaving software, you could pretend you had 12 shafts instead of 8, say,
that's
and
true.
See what happened.
Make all these beautiful drafts I could not weave.
But then you could figure out, when you make a draft and you like it, or you see cloth, the next thing is to think, what do I really like about this? And how could I emphasize that in my next draft? How could I get that quality in fewer shafts? You were looking at a scarf when you came in that I wove, and you asked how many shafts. And I said, I did that on 16 on the loom and the cap'n. But I made drafts for 8 shafts using those same components. That scarf is echo weave, and the vest I'm wearing is turned taquette, but I do both structures on the same threading. So the other kind of threading that I've been exploring a lot is a parallel threading. Shadow weave and warp wrap are the two places where a lot of weavers have already seen parallel threadings. It took me a while to appreciate the design freedom that I get with the parallel threadings, but I'm having a lot of fun with them. And I do think of it as two different layers of warp. So one layer could be solid and one multicolor dyed, or you could use one layer shading from, say, green into blue, and the other layer might be, say, dark purple or something. And I tend to like some value contrast between the two layers. Value contrast is what makes your design show up. I want to make cloth that looks the way I want it to, and it feels and handles the way I want it to handle, but I have to know how to get there. When I see a cloth that I think is fabulous, I find out from the weaver when I can what is the weave structure, and if not, I analyze it, I figure out how it was made, and then do I have a way to describe this, or is there a term for it? Echo weave is a fairly new term. It came out in an article by Alice Schlein in Weavers Magazine in about 96. Alice had a parallel threading on a loom. Traditionally, these parallel threadings, if you have a fairly dense set, they were used for warp wrap, where with 8 shafts, you could have 8 blocks. I think she just decided to see what would happen if she wove this threading with a twill tie-up and a twill treadling, which she had on her computer already. So once you've got weaving software, mix and match is very easy. It looked worth trying, so she tried it. Because she was Alice, she tried network drafted twills and twill tie-ups, and it turned out to be very cool fabric. Alice also likes single shuttle weaves and warp emphasis fabrics. So these were things that appealed to her right off the bat. I don't think there is an actual definition of echo weave yet because it's a fairly new thing people are experimenting with.
What resources are out there for people who have just gotten that 16 shaft or 24 shaft loom, aside from your book and Complex Weavers?
Complex Weavers is a major resource because they have a journal. It comes out 3 times a year and includes articles about structure and theory, not just recipes and projects. And it includes articles from many points of view. Complex Weavers also has a website, complex-weavers.org, and it has a lot of study groups. And joining a study group, you're sharing information with people and, you know, all over the world. Complex Weavers is a hoot. It's really fun. That's my all-time favorite conference. It's just really neat.
That's happening right after Convergence.
Yeah, it is. It used to happen before Convergence, and now it's happening after. Complex Weavers is a very international organization. A lot of them say, well, it's really worth the money and the time to fly, say, from New Zealand or Australia or England or wherever, if you can do 2 conferences back to back. And with Convergence, they get to see all those great exhibits, and sometimes they'll take a pre-conference workshop and then do Convergence and then go to Complex Weavers. Complex Weavers is small, friendly, intimate. It's a bunch of people sharing. We all eat in a dining hall, and you can meet with people over meals and relax. And the fashion show is extremely informal, and you wear the thing yourself, or you ask a friend to model it, and people will ask you questions, and you can answer them, and people snap pictures. And it feels very different from Convergence, which is the other extreme. It's huge, and a lot of things are done by professionals. Taking workshops from weavers who use more than 8 shafts would be a way for people to learn more in a concentrated period of time. If you're starting into multi-shaft weaving, there are a lot of us out there teaching. If I'm teaching the big twill, it's basically about network drafting and advancing twills. I have about 20 designs for that. I'll take up to 20 people, and the workshop looms could have 4 shafts, 6, 8, 12, 16, 24. So I have the same design expressed as drafts for all these different numbers. You learn how to make the designs you want at the size you want for the number of shafts you have, but you also see the difference between expressing it as an 8-shaft draft and expressing it as a 12-shaft or a 16-shaft draft. The workshop I'm doing on parallel threadings includes looms with 4 shafts and 8 and 12 and 16 and 24. And we've had 32s in that. Other resources, weave tech is important. And weave tech is not specifically for multi-shaft, but it's for weavers who are not beginners. It's not encouraging questions about, I'd like to learn to weave, what kind of loom should I buy? It encourages weavers who are using weaving software, and computer assist looms are just fine. Nobody's going to say, oh, you can't call that hand weaving if you're not climbing under the loom to do the tie up. You have to climb under the loom or it's not hand weaving.
From my point of view, I've been a writer before I started weaving, and nobody says you're less of a writer because you're using word processing software versus quill and parchment. And I know for some people there's the historical tradition of doing it the old way, but for me, I think art happens in your head, and whatever you use to express that in words or textiles or podcasts are just the tools and don't affect the creative part of it.
Yeah, I agree totally. And you also write fiction, no?
I write science fiction, yes.
Science fiction. Oh, okay.
So we're very tech friendly.
Yeah, no, the idea that I should make my drafts on graph paper and put the little X's in the squares. I mean, I did that. I know how to use graph paper. I started weaving in 67. Believe me, I used graph paper. I don't see any point now in having to put the little X's in the squares. And when I'm teaching, I taught for quite a while with blackboards and putting the drafts up on the blackboard. Oh, after the first 3 or 4 times you've erased a draft and written in again, it's hard for people to see. And as a teacher, if I'm writing on the board, I've turned my back on the class and I can't talk directly to them. I can't see their reaction. If I have my laptop hooked up to a digital projector and there's a screen next to me and behind, I can watch the class and speak to them and they can see the draft. And then if I want to change the tie up a bit and show them what happens to the drawdown when you change the tie up, well, with weaving software, you change the tie up and you can see instantly what happens in the drawdown. On a blackboard, I'd have to redo that entire drawdown.
Well, you said something in the introduction to your book that I thought put it just exquisitely well. Somebody came and talked to you about the fact that Guatemalan weavers, for example, were doing incredibly complicated things with, you
That's
know.
That's right. It was at the Textile Museum. I was doing a demonstration at the National Textile Museum in Washington, D.C. And they said, oh, those weavers in Peru made absolutely beautiful fabrics and they didn't have computers. I told her, I think they did a beautiful job, but if I can make the design using weaving software instead of graph paper, if I can weave it on a more efficient loom, and if I can do loom-controlled images instead of using my fingers and pickup to make the image, it's more fun for me because the cloth is growing faster. I think the weavers in Peru, if they could see what I'm doing now, those ancient Inca women, they would be envious of what I have. They would think, look at that, she can do that.
They'd join complex weavers.
So much more efficiently, yeah, I think so.
I think
and
right.
We've seen some of this now in India and Asia, where the newer looms are being introduced to cottage industry and people are picking up on it right away. If they don't have reliable electricity, they can use dubby bars and pegs. And that hasn't, you know, that's been around for about 200 years, but it's not all that ancient a tradition, but it's certainly more efficient. We don't have to turn our backs on everything that came out of the Industrial Revolution either. And if I want to go to Peru, I don't have to walk.
That's true. That's true. It's been a delight talking with you, and thank you for expanding my education of complicated multi-shaft patterns. as we're heading off, what's next for you? What are you going to do in the future?
I'm working primarily towards the two seminar topics that were chosen by the Committee for Complex Weavers Seminars. I often do that. If Complex Weavers accepts something from me, I use that as a challenge to try and do something quite new and innovative in that field, because I know that in the audience at Complex Weavers, there will be very experienced weavers and lots of weaving teachers, and I don't want them to get bored. So I work on that. The other seminar is on double weave on a tied threading. If you want a glimpse of what I do with loom-controlled imagery and turned summer and winter, I did an article for Handwoven summer of 2006, not 7, that was two turned summer and winter towels, one with an iris and one with a weaving shuttle. But I like using my 24-shaft loom for that. For quite a while, I've been working with a type of double weave that's done on the same threading and the same warp as my turned summer and winter. I know I'll be doing some more with that as well. Then I'd like to do some more writing about weaving also.
Very cool. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. It was nice to meet you.
An Evening with Penelope by John Sandstrom. I admit it. I'm a beginning weaver. I'm still in the oops, that was a dumb mistake stage. But this one took me back in time for an evening with Penelope. For those of you who don't remember her, Penelope was the wife of Odysseus of Trojan War fame. She wove and unwove the same tapestry for 20 years, waiting for her husband to come home. There's more to that story, but this is my story, not hers. You see, my current project is a 30-yard belly band for the guard gear my household uses at the Penzic Wars. It is the first of two that I need to have done by late July. In addition to my real job and graduate school. Now, I've been weaving 2 to 3 yard warps for over a year, and I've gotten pretty good at that, and thought it was time to move up to a larger project. I carefully wound the warp on my warping board. No problem. I even added a couple of extra warps, just in case. I chained it off the board and shifted the whole thing over to my loom. I cut the loops and spent an evening slaying the reed and threading the heddles and tying onto the warp beam. This really wasn't too bad. I'm used to working with warps that are 192 ends, and this one was only 72. So I was surprised at how fast it went. Then I started winding on, and the problems began. First, since I've never worked with a warp this long, I decided to use warp sticks. Should have been easy, but about 2 yards into it, I realized that some had slipped and were crooked. Even I knew that crooked warp sticks wouldn't work in the long run. So, unwind it and start over. Then the next issue shows up. As a single person, I usually wind warps alone. I've found that hopping back and forth, winding and pulling and untangling isn't too bad. But this time, I get all 10 yards wound on and discover that my front ends, which should probably not vary by more than a couple of inches, are varying by close to 2 feet. This is a very bad sign. In hindsight, I should have stopped right there and fixed everything, but no. I figured it would resolve itself while I was weaving, and went ahead and tied off. I wove the header and started on the pattern. Less than 10 picks into it, I realized that the tension was off, so I pulled those picks and retied. No problem, it happens. So I started weaving again, and this time got through about 1.5 repeats, about 9 inches. Then I realized that the tension was once again off, and I might have a more serious problem. So I stopped weaving and took my concerns to my font of all weaving wisdom, those great folks on the FiberNet list. The general consensus was, "Ooh, sorry to hear your problems, and you need to start over." Okay, that's a one-line summary of some really helpful emails from several really great weavers that included ways to make sure the problem didn't happen again. And so, I spent an evening with Penelope, unweaving what I had woven the day before. Then, without unthreading my heddles or unslaying my reed, I unwound the entire warp. A couple of nights later, I rewound it with the help of a friend. The tension was even, the ends had a variance of a couple of inches, and I was ready to weave again. This is not how I wanted this project to go, but I learned some important lessons, both for weaving and for the rest of my life. First, investigate oddities as soon as you notice them. You never know when they'll be important. Second, undoing can be almost as educational as doing. Third, reversing a pattern can be an interesting and useful challenge. Fourth, never be afraid to ask for help. And finally, fifth, the earlier you address an issue, the better. Hopefully, I'll remember these and apply them in the future, and I won't spend any more evenings with Penelope.
I'd like to talk just a little bit more about Bonnie's book, Exploring Multishaft Design. This is the book that you want next to you when you unpack your new 16-shaft loom and you're wondering, what the heck can I do with this thing? It starts off with how to design basic twills, controlling the angle, addressing float lengths, and then it goes on to more complicated subjects like plated twills, curves, turned and advancing twills, network drafting. It talks about other weave structures like tied weaves, double weaves. It goes into color and weave. The overall focus of it is learning how to design your own drafts. It's not so much a book about structure as a book about design. It's published with numerous drawdowns. The writing I found very clear and easy to follow, and it addresses both computer-assisted looms as well as mechanical Dobby looms. The designing process is described in overview, but then Bonnie also gives you step-by-step strategies for when you're sitting down to actually make a weave draft, things to think about, and the process that you undergo. Those step-by-step strategies would make a wonderful self-study, or if you're a guild looking for a summer project. I've only played around just a tiny amount with creating weaving drafts, and my most complicated loom is an 8-shaft loom, so I haven't been able to fully delve into some of the things that are in this book, but I can say from just the bit of dabbling I've done, it is a special feeling to weave on the loom and see something that you had only imagined in your head start to grow on the cloth and to see that made manifest. For one of the Weavezine articles in the summer issue, I designed a sarong that had these big undulating waves at one end and kind of broke down into little ripples at the far end, which was to resemble waves breaking on the surf. Because I only had an 8-shaft loom, my undulating waves were not so dramatic, and the transition to the little bit of the surf was not as dramatic as it would have been if it had more shafts to play with. But it was still just an amazing feeling to have a concept, an artistic idea, and be able to put that into the structure of the cloth. If you haven't ever designed your own weave drafts, no matter how many shafts your loom has, play with it. It is a lot of fun. And if you have 8 or more shafts, this book, Exploring Multi-Shaft Design, is well worth taking a look at. And now we've got a little bit more Bonnie Inoue for you. During our conversation, she explained some weave structures, but it didn't fit into the flow of the interview. But I wanted you to have a chance to hear these outtakes. They're really wonderful. First, she describes advancing twill and then talks about tacate.
Advancing twill is if you take a segment of a twill, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, on an 8-shaft loom or more than 8, and then you move it up. So you repeat that same sequence, but start it somewhere else. And the simplest way to start would be to move it up by one position. So the next run of twill would be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then it would be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You end up with, on an 8-shaft loom, you have 8 blocks on 8 shafts. And there would be 40 threads in a repeat, 5 times 8. So you can make designs that you can see from some distance. They're much larger scale than just an 8-shaft twill that goes from 1 to 8 and repeats in 8 threads. But it still has the hand and the drape of a twill. Tacate is an old structure. It goes back to about the 3rd century AD, at least. And that's on a summer and winter threading. You weave the pattern on opposites with no tabby. So typically on summer and winter, you have a pattern and then a tabby and a pattern and a tabby. If you weave a pattern and then the opposite lift of the pattern, which means on a table loom, all the levers that were up are going to go down and all the levers that were down are going to go up. That's the opposite lift. So tacate has 2 shuttles or more, but you can have 2 colors and with 2 shuttles, and they're woven on opposites on a single warp. So if you turn the draft, then you have 2 layers of warp, and they're threaded on opposites, and you have 1 shuttle. So instead of being a weft emphasis fabric, it becomes a warp emphasis fabric. Very cool. And a single shuttle. But it's still the longest float in turn tacate is 3 threads, and it's very consistent throughout. 3 and 1 and 3 and 1 are the floats. And it's fun because the designs in turn tacate come from which of the warp layers is dominant. It's almost like magic when you look at it, and you can't see easily in the cloth what makes the design form. The structure is totally consistent. And what's changing is the color.
As I was finishing up editing this episode, I got an important announcement from one of my favorite weavers about a big project that they had just completed.
Hello.
Tell them what you finished recently that we cut off your loom.
My scarf.
Was that the first thing you'd ever woven?
No.
No, what else had you woven?
I actually woven, like, a different scarf before.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was so special about this scarf that you cut off the loom recently?
Because it had lots of different colors. And my other one just had brown.
And so all the different colors, where did those come from?
You.
And how did you get all those different colors?
From you.
Oh, did I just go here, have some yarn?
Yeah.
I did. I remember it quite a different way. I remember you going, Mommy, can I have a sample?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That went a different way, like what you said.
What's your favorite kind of yarn to weave with?
Sunday Begin with, so it's really soft yarn.
Really soft? You mean like rayon chenille?
Yeah, that's my favorite yarn to do. Rayon chenille.
Oh, okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the Weavecast audience?
Yeah.
What?
Kai Rodcasting.
Okay. Well, this has been Kai with his mom, and we're talking to you from the Weavecast studio. Say bye.
Bye.
Weavecast is supported through the generosity of its donating listeners. This episode, I'd like to thank Jane, Marlene, Beverly, Laura Lee, and Gina. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Our sponsor this episode is Just Our Yarn, purveyors of luxury hand-painted yarns for weavers. Check out their booth at Convergence. Our musical guest this episode was DJ Black Acid with the funk stylings of Better Than Shaft.
Just fine. Nobody's going to say, oh, you can't call that hand weaving if you're not climbing under the loom to do the tie up. You have to climb under the loom or it's not hand weaving.
From my point of view, I've been a writer before I started weaving. And Nobody says you're less of a writer because you're using word processing software versus quill and parchment. And I know for some people, there's the historical tradition of doing it the old way. But for me, I think art happens in your head and whatever you use to express that in words or textiles or podcasts are just the tools and don't affect the creative part of it.
Yeah, I agree totally. And you also write fiction, no?
I write science fiction, yes.
Science fiction. Oh, okay.
So we're very tech friendly.
Yeah, no, the idea that I should make my drafts on graph paper and put the little X's in the squares, I mean, I did that. I know how to use graph paper. I started weaving in 67. Believe me, I used graph paper. I don't see any point now in having to put the little X's in the squares. And when I'm teaching, I taught for quite a while with blackboards and putting the drafts up on the blackboard. Oh, after the first three or four times you've erased a draft and written in again, it's hard for people to see. And as a teacher, if I'm writing on the board, I've turned my back on the class and I can't talk directly to them. I can't see their reaction. If I have my laptop hooked up to a digital projector and there's a screen next to me and behind, I can watch the class and speak to them and they can see the draft. And then if I want to change the tie up a bit and show them what happens to the drawdown when you change the tie-up. Well, with weaving software, you change the tie-up and you can see instantly what happens in the drawdown. On a blackboard, I'd have to redo that entire drawdown.
Well, you said something in the introduction to your book that I thought put it just exquisitely well. Somebody came and talked to you about the fact that Guatemalan weavers, for example, were doing incredibly complicated things with, you
know.
That's
right. It was at the Textile Museum. I was doing a demonstration at the National Textile Museum in Washington, D.C. And they said, oh, those weavers in Peru made absolutely beautiful fabrics and they didn't have computers. I told her, I think they did a beautiful job. But if I can make the design using weaving software instead of graph paper, if I can weave it on a more efficient loom, and if I can do loom-controlled images instead of using my fingers and pickup to make the image, it's more fun for me because the cloth is growing faster. I think the weavers in Peru, if they could see what I'm doing now, those ancient Inca women, they would be envious of what I have. They would think, look at that, she can do that.
They join complex weavers
so much more efficiently. Yeah, I think so. I think, and right. We've seen some of this now in India and Asia, where the newer looms are being introduced to cottage industry, and people are picking up on it right away. If they don't have reliable electricity, they can use Dobibarsan pegs, and that hasn't, you know, that's been around for about 200 years, but it's not all that ancient a tradition, but it's certainly more efficient. We don't have to turn our backs on everything that came out of the Industrial Revolution either. And if I want to go to Peru, I don't have to walk.
That's true. That's true. It's been a delight talking with you, and thank you for expanding my education of complicated multi-shaft patterns. As we're heading off, what's next for you? What are you going to do in the future?
I'm working primarily towards the two seminar topics that were chosen by the Committee for Complex Weavers Seminars. I often do that. If Complex Weavers accept something from me, I use that as a challenge to try and do something quite new and innovative in that field, because I know that in the audience at Complex Weavers, there will be very experienced weavers and lots of weaving teachers, and I don't want them to get bored. So I work on that. The other seminar is on double weave on a tied threading. If you want a glimpse of what I do with loom controlled imagery and turn summer and winter, I did an article for Handwoven summer of 2006, not 2007, that was two turn summer and winter towels, one with an iris and one with a weaving shuttle. But I like using my 24 shaft loom for that. For quite a while, I've been working with a type of double weave that's done on the same threading and the same warp as my turn summer and winter. I know I'll be doing some more with that as well. Then I'd like to do some more writing about weaving also.
Very cool. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. It was nice to meet you.
An Evening with Penelope by John Sandstrom. I admit it. I'm a beginning weaver. I'm still in the oops, that was a dumb mistake stage. But this one took me back in time for An Evening with Penelope. For those of you who don't remember her, Penelope was the wife of Odysseus of Trojan War fame. She wove and unwove the same tapestry for 20 years, waiting for her husband to come home. There's more to that story, but this is my story, not hers. You see, my current project is a 30-yard belly band for the guard gear my household uses at the Penzic Wars. It is the first of two that I need to have done by late July. In addition to my real job and graduate school. Now, I've been weaving 2 to 3 yard warps for over a year, and I've gotten pretty good at that, and thought it was time to move up to a larger project. I carefully wound the warp on my warping board. No problem. I even added a couple of extra warps, just in case. I chained it off the board and shifted the whole thing over to my loom. I cut the loops and spent an evening slaying the reed and threading the heddles and tying onto the warp beam. This really wasn't too bad. I'm used to working with warps that are 192 ends, and this one was only 72. So I was surprised at how fast it went. Then I started winding on, and the problems began. First, since I've never worked with a warp this long, I decided to use warp sticks. Should have been easy, but about 2 yards into it, I realized that some had slipped and were crooked. Even I knew that crooked warp sticks wouldn't work in the long run. So, unwind it and start over. Then the next issue shows up. As a single person, I usually wind warps alone. I found that hopping back and forth, winding and pulling and untangling isn't too bad. But this time, I get all 10 yards wound on and discover that my front ends, which should probably not vary by more than a couple of inches, are varying by close to 2 feet. This is a very bad sign. In hindsight, I should have stopped right there and fixed everything, but no, I figured it would resolve itself while I was weaving and went ahead and tied off. I wove the header and started on the pattern. Less than 10 picks into it, I realized that the tension was off. So I pulled those picks and retied. No problem, it happens. So I started weaving again, and this time got through about 1.5 repeats, about 9 inches. Then I realized that the tension was once again off, and I might have a more serious problem. So I stopped weaving and took my concerns to my font of all weaving wisdom, those great folks on the FiberNet list. The general consensus was, "Ooh, sorry to hear your problems, and you need to start over." Okay, that's a one-line summary of some really helpful emails from several really great weavers that included ways to make sure the problem didn't happen again. And so, I spent an evening with Penelope, unweaving what I had woven the day before. Then, without unthreading my heddles or unslaying my reed, I unwound the entire warp. A couple of nights later, I rewound it with the help of a friend. The tension was even, the ends had a variance of a couple of inches, and I was ready to weave again. This is not how I wanted this project to go, but I learned some important lessons, both for weaving and for the rest of my life. First, investigate oddities as soon as you notice them. You never know when they'll be important. Second, undoing can be almost as educational as doing. Third, reversing a pattern can be an interesting and useful challenge. Fourth, never be afraid to ask for help. And finally, fifth, the earlier you address an issue, the better. Hopefully, I'll remember these and apply them in the future, and I won't spend any more evenings with Penelope.
I'd like to talk just a little bit more about Bonnie's book, Exploring Multishaft Design. This is the book that you want next to you when you unpack your new 16-shaft loom and you're wondering, what the heck can I do with this thing? It starts off with how to design basic twills, controlling the angle, addressing float lengths, and then it goes on to more complicated subjects like plated twills, curves, turned and advancing twills, network drafting. It talks about other weave structures like tied weaves, double weaves. It goes into color and weave. The overall focus of it is learning how to design your own drafts. It's not so much a book about structure as a book about design. It's published with numerous drawdowns. The writing I found very clear and easy to follow, and it addresses both computer-assisted looms as well as mechanical dobby looms. The designing process is described in overview, but then Bonnie also gives you step-by-step strategies for when you're sitting down to actually make a weave draft, things to think about, and the process that you undergo. Those step-by-step strategies would make a wonderful self-study, or if you're a guild looking for a summer project. I've only played around just a tiny amount with creating weaving drafts, And my most complicated loom is an 8-shaft loom. So I haven't been able to fully delve into some of the things that are in this book. But I can say from just the bit of dabbling I've done, it is a special feeling to weave on the loom and see something that you had only imagined in your head start to grow on the cloth and to see that made manifest. For one of the Weavezine articles in the summer issue, I designed a sarong that had these big undulating waves at one end and kind of broke down into little ripples at the far end, which was to resemble waves breaking on the surf. Because I only had an 8-shaft loom, my undulating waves were not so dramatic. And the transition to the little bit of the surf was not as dramatic as it would have been if it had more shafts to play with. But it was still just an amazing feeling to have a concept, an artistic idea, and be able to put that into the structure of the cloth. If you haven't ever designed your own weave drafts, no matter how many shafts your loom has, play with it. It is a lot of fun. And if you have 8 or more shafts, this book, Exploring Multi-Shaft Design, is well worth taking a look at. And now we've got a little bit more Bonnie Inouye for you. During our conversation, she explained some weave structures, but it didn't fit into the flow of the interview. But I wanted you to have a chance to hear these outtakes. They're really wonderful. First, she describes advancing twill and then talks about tacate.
Advancing twill is if you take a segment of a twill, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on an 8-shaft loom or more than 8, and then you move it up so you repeat that same sequence but start it somewhere else. And the simplest way to start would be to move it up by 1 position, so the next run of twill would be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then it would be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You end up with, on an 8-shaft loom, you have 8 blocks on 8 shafts, and there would be 40 threads in a repeat, 5 times 8. So you can make designs that you can see from some distance. They're much larger scale than just an 8-shaft twill that goes from 1 to 8 and repeats in 8 threads. But it still has the hand and the drape of a twill. Tacate is an old structure. It goes back to about the 3rd century AD, at least. And that's on a summer and winter threading. You weave the pattern on opposites with no tabby. So typically on summer and winter, you have a pattern and then a tabby and a pattern and a tabby. If you weave a pattern and then the opposite lift of the pattern, which means on a table loom, all the levers that were up are going to go down and all the levers that were down are going to go up. That's the opposite lift. So tacate has 2 shuttles or more, but you can have 2 colors. And with 2 shuttles, and they're woven on opposites on a single warp. So if you turn the draft, then you have 2 layers of warp, and they're threaded on opposites, and you have 1 shuttle. So instead of being a weft emphasis fabric, it becomes a warp emphasis fabric. Very cool. And a single shuttle. But it's still the longest float in turn tacate is 3 threads, and it's very consistent throughout. 3 and 1 and 3 and 1 are the floats. And it's fun because the designs in turn tacate come from which of the warp layers is dominant. It's almost like magic when you look at it, and you can't see easily in the cloth what makes the design form. The structure is totally consistent, and what's changing is the color.
As I was finishing up editing this episode, I got an important announcement from one of my favorite weavers about a big project that they had just completed.
Hello.
Tell them what you finished recently that we cut off your loom.
My scarf.
Was that the first thing you'd ever woven?
No.
No? What else had you woven?
I actually woven, like, a different scarf before.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was so special about this scarf that you cut off the loom recently?
Because it had lots of different colors. And my other one just had brown.
And so all the different colors, where did those come from?
You.
And how did you get all those different colors?
From you.
Oh, did I just go here, have some yarn?
Yeah.
I did. I remember it quite a different way. I remember you going, Mommy, can I have a sample?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That one a different way. Like what you said.
What's your favorite kind of yarn to weave with?
Something begin with, so it's really soft yarn.
Really soft? You mean like rayon chenille?
Yeah, that's my favorite yarn to do. Rayon chenille.
Oh, okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the WeaveCast audience?
Yeah.
What?
Kai Rodcasting.
Okay. Well, this has been Kai with his mom, and we're talking to you from the WeaveCast studio. Say bye.
Bye.
WeaveCast is supported through the generosity of its donating listeners. This episode, I'd like to thank Jane, Marlene, Beverly, Laura Lee, and Gina. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Our sponsor this episode is Just Our Yarn, purveyors of luxury hand-painted yarns for weavers. Check out their booth at Convergence. Our musical guest this episode was DJ Black Acid with the funk stylings of Better Than Shaft.